Josh, can you do me a favor and just move the microphone closer to your mouth and see if that picks up? I can't tell if you're getting, if it's picking up the microphone or your desktop or your, you know, your laptop speaker. Like, even just as a test, like, if you just pick it up and put it in your mouth and, or not put it in your mouth, but.
You don't even get, just tap the microphone.
How far in my mouth? How far?
Yeah, that's good. Okay. That's far enough, yes. Plenty far enough in your mouth, yes.
We're not recording this, so we can.
I mean, the visual would make that, if you could fit that microphone in your mouth, I'd be impressed.
You need to start, I don't know how you do it, but if you could figure out how to start, like when you download the podcast, if you were able to, if the user was able to download a thumbnail with it, like some do.
I think it does allow me to change like the cover art per episode if I want to. Surprised you'd even want that on the internet, period. Like, that's not something I'd want to be like, yeah, you know what, let me put that up there for people to see.
What part of my life is it getting?
All right, well, Mike wins. He can fit it in his mouth, so.
Like, what fair, part of my life would that be ruining?
Yeah, like, it's for comedy. Like, it's, you know.
At the same time, content, there's probably.
Who cares? You can do anything and get away with it, and it's just like, well, it was for content. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, all right. You guys tested everybody. Everybody has, it's on the backup. Really, if I need to, I can pull this. Hello and welcome to another episode of Bri Guy and Super Friends. I'm your host, Brian Labick. Joining me for this episode, which is in another multiverse, could be an episode that hundreds of people are listening to, is Josh Zorich.
I'm figuring out which version of which character I want to be.
Well, think it over and get back to us. And secondly, we have Mike Bradley.
I am here, and that's a good thing, right? But we also... in this version of the multiverse, have our brave host, Brian, who is fresh from escaping the latest kidnapping and assault of Ezra Miller. Brian, tell us, how did you escape?
I channeled my inner Flash and just ran as fast as I fucking could.
And you're faster than Ezra Miller. That's excellent. That's good to know.
Yeah, I'll chalk that up. Yep.
Excellent. I cannot disprove that, so...
I used to, you know, going back to like seventh grade, I was at one point labeled as the fastest kid in my class. Really? Eric can attest to this. That was basically the way that I sort of met Eric is like we knew each other in passing. There was this big race at the end of the year in like seventh grade. I beat everybody. And then Eric, of course, in my yearbook writes, you're fast or some shit like that. And then from then on, we've been best buds. But yeah, that was the culmination of a lot of that shit.
So that is the Brian Eric origin story.
Yeah. Yeah, in a sense, yes.
All right, that's adorable.
I've lost so much speed since then, but you know, at one point, I can hang my hat on that.
Hey, everybody's got something, you know.
Yeah. all right, so I usually always do the housekeeping stuff at the end. I'm gonna try to do a little bit up top here. This will most likely be the last episode you get for a couple weeks. I'm gonna be on vacation, so the episodes will resume when I return, unless we can sneak a recording in there next week that I can turn around quickly. But I. Doubt it. So we're kind of ballparking the next episode that will probably be released will probably be around July 17th or somewhere in there. Not quite sure what we'll cover yet. I know we haven't talked about Across the Spider-Verse, so that's an option. Indiana Jones releases this week. That's an option. At the time that episode's released, it will be the time when Dead Reckoning comes out, which we probably won't have. We may have watched at that point, but we're probably going to end up recording before we watch the movie. So... it could be one of the other movies, and then the next episode would be Dead Reckoning. So somewhere mid-July, end of July, we could get a Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning in there.
Is that an all-hands recording, by the way?
I was going to say, yeah, I think I said this in the one we did for Fallout, but or maybe I just talked about it with everybody afterwards or something. But yeah, we'll try to get everybody back for that one, see if we can get all five of us on for a brand new Mission Impossible movie and talk about that. And that would probably – we're probably going to put that – I'm going to, in my mind, frame it as basically a review episode. We're not going to frame it like I've never seen that because no one has seen this movie yet. We'll treat it like a brand new movie, brand new review, and kind of go through the motions for that one. Another reminder, because I know I talked about it on previous episodes, but if you want to head over to my Twitch channel, at Jedi Bri Guy, I have a playlist together of all the videos from my Jedi Survivor playthrough. So check it out if you're curious. Mike and I did the game review a couple episodes ago. Great fucking game. If you want to see my experience through the game, check it out. It's there.
You can also catch me streaming again under the Rare Achievements tag. Twitch.tv/Rare Achievements. I am streaming again starting next week on Monday. It'll be a consistent schedule. It's been kind of hectic with a weird schedule lately.
Yeah, I was going to ask about a schedule. Okay.
But it'll be pretty consistent. Daytime, half the week, and evenings on probably Tuesdays and Thursdays. So
cool.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, probably daytime. Others, evenings.
What? You had a... Wasn't... I'm just trying to remember. Wasn't Bruzy your last handle? Did you go back to Rare Achievements?
I went back to Rare Achievements. Yeah, like it was just like, you know what, all my branding that I had created stuff for the channel was all under Rare Achievements. So like, okay, I had panels, I have all this stuff. I actually have followers on YouTube for that. So I figured, you know, I may as well.
Oh, okay, cool. Nice.
Roll back to that and see if I can make a go of it. I'm just going to spring this. I didn't tell Brian about this until right now. but I was planning to set up and see how he felt about it. But we're just going to dedicate them to it here. We're going to play a tag team co-op Resident Evil 5. Sheva and Chris, we're going to run through it. I'm just putting it out there. I'm putting it on him, and I am like, I'm putting him under the gun on this.
I couldn't tell you last time I played Resident Evil 5.
Same, but I know I love it. It's a good game.
I guess, I mean, it'd have to be over Xbox, right? I would think.
I know I own it on Xbox.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I own it. Well, I'd have to look. Because I don't, now I'm trying to remember. I think I have it like 360. I don't think I have it for like Xbox One or something. I think
it's on PS Plus if you do that. I know that.
I have the basic. I don't have any of the like extra Game Pass type of stuff for PlayStation.
I don't know which level you need for it, honestly.
I don't know. Hey, we can talk about
it. We'll figure it out, but we're going to do it.
Get the logistics figured out later. Josh, you got anything to plug?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay. figured I'd give it the option.
I mean, every now and then, most of the time I'm doing yard work. So if you already know where I live, because I'm not sharing that information here, but feel free to come by and like bring me a nice tea. You can do that.
Or, you know, just drive past, honk your horn, let them know you're there.
Brian, you've heard of Let's Watch, right?
Yeah.
So it's like where friends get together and they watch somebody play a video game. So Josh has talked to us several times about playing the Hogwarts Legacy game. And I would be more than willing to set up sessions of recording. I'll do it right here. I'll let Josh play the Hogwarts Legacy game while we watch and commentate his gameplay as he goes.
So we can really backseat you and really, really make you angry.
Yes, exactly. Because
you're doing all of it wrong, Josh. You're playing the game wrong.
Yeah, like you don't have to be, oh, do it like this. You just frame it as we're just going to watch Josh play and talk about what he's doing and, you know, a little bit of riff tracks, a little bit of assistance if you have questions, you know, stuff like that. But mostly just having fun with it.
I don't even know how the game starts out necessarily, but in the event that it... I'm just going to invent the idea that it begins with your character receiving their Hogwarts letter. I'm assuming I would be so bad at understanding how modern games are played.
That's the entertainment part.
The controllers. That I wouldn't even be able to like pick the envelope up off the table to open my Hogwarts letter to begin the damn game.
That sounds like content.
Doesn't make
to
it
me.
Past the tutorial.
That sounds like content. That's what it sounds like to me, is people will laugh at this and want to watch it.
If I can monetize it, I'm willing to do anything, really.
Worth a shot.
Something else to discuss.
Worth a shot.
Off air. all right, so we're here to talk about DC's latest superhero flick, The Flash. Now, there's a lot to dig into with this one, so I'm going to save some of the story specifics for the spoiler section, obviously. What I want to talk about first isn't necessarily what we thought of the movie yet, but I'll try to go through sort of where this movie was. So the movie itself, I think, is something we joked about over the years that we would that would never see the light of day. Back when the Snyderverse was kicking off, The Flash is one of the movies announced that was leading up to Justice League. The original date, although tentative, was sometime in 2016. They nailed down Ezra Miller as Barry Allen. The movie moved to March 2018. This began the revolving door of writers and directors involved with the project. So if we go back to 2015, in April, Phil Lord and Chris Miller worked on a treatment for the film, were aiming to direct. However, they turned down the job to direct Solo, A Star Wars Story, which was another story we covered back in the day, because they were eventually fired from that film and then moved on to Spider-Verse, and the rest is kind of history. Seth Graham Smith, who directed Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, was in talks to take over after Lord Miller. Graham Smith did write a script based on Lord Miller's treatment. He dropped out of the project in April 2016. In June 2016, Rick Famuyiwa was brought on to direct and began casting. I completely forgot he was involved with this movie at any point. He started with Graham Smith's script, also made a pass on it as well. He left the project October of 2016. That was basically cited for creative differences. January 2017, Joby Harold was brought on to write a script. He completed it in May of 2017. Matthew Vaughn and Robert Zemeckis at the time were rumored to possibly direct. Neither one ended up signing on. I remember talking about the Zemeckis thing back then. That was something we did talk about on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Mazou, I think, who was attached to the project at one point in 2009, was brought on again to rewrite the script. Then in January 2018, John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein were rumored to be coming on to direct. By March of 2018, they had signed on to direct. A year later, in March of 2019, Ezra Miller made headlines saying they were going to write their own darker version of the script with comic icon Grant Morrison, which I also remember covering this on the show at the time, to ensure that this movie gets made. Their contract was coming to an end. If Warner Brothers didn't like their script, it was unclear if they were even going to continue in the role. Ultimately, Warner Brothers didn't use their script because they wanted to keep the lighter tone, but Ezra was still kept on as Barry Allen, so they called his bluff, I guess. By the end of July 2019, John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein left the project again. So again, it's left without a director. So that leads us to where we ended up. Christina Hodson came in to write the movie. Warner Brothers finally locked down Andy Muschietti to direct the movie. At the time, the movie was expected to release in the summer of 2022. Now, we've come a long way since all that drama. In the midst of all that, we had a pandemic, multiple Warner Brothers leadership changes, and Ezra Miller's eccentric and dangerous behavior making headlines. So if you can remember, this is for both of you, back in 2020, when Muschietti came aboard and it seemed like this movie was actually moving along, at this point, it was confirmed they were going to adapt the Flashpoint storyline for this movie. Do we remember how we felt back in 2020 and where we thought this movie was going to go? Josh, I'll start with you.
Does that mean that you like listened back a little bit?
I didn't. Some of our thoughts? This is just, we're just trying to pull from memory.
Got it.
Do you remember? Okay. If you can remember back from there,
sure.
I feel like having a lot of trepidation for this movie. I don't remember being very excited. I think it was just because it was stuck in development hell. Like I wasn't really sure where it was going to go, if it was going to be made.
Right.
I don't remember where you guys fell, if we were all sort of in the same boat or if anyone was actually excited about this back then.
I mean, since none of us are going to go back to listen to the episodes, and presuming that, you know, none of our listeners care as much to do, we can basically say whatever we want. So
yeah, we didn't do our own homework, so it's fine.
I would guess that by that point, yeah, after 5 to 6 years of Warner Brothers trying to play catch up to Marvel, constantly announcing changing road plans, you know, then we got the fallout from Batman v Superman, then the Justice League kerfuffle, all of that happening over those years. By the time you hit 2020, you know, you're very jaded by any real prospect of this ever happening. Now, at whatever point that they even hinted at adapting a Flashpoint Paradox storyline, I do know that by that point, by 2020, I had definitely watched the DC animated movie adaptation of that graphic novel, and I've loved it ever since. This isn't meant as like a pot shot at them, but they kind of bastardized the idea of that for the Flash CW show. They took like the very basic idea of it, like just the one central idea, but didn't go anywhere else with it. They and I was a little disappointed by that, but I get why they couldn't do that on TV.
I remember that being such a good cliffhanger for the end of season two for the Flash.
Yes.
I guess spoilers for the Flash, but they but if you don't know what Flashpoint.
If you don't know what Flashpoint is yet, then it's not really that much
of
a spoiler.
Yeah, we'll talk generally just about the terms and stuff,
but yeah.
It was a storyline that's such a big comic book thing that when it happened in the show, I was like, oh, fucking crap, they're going to do this. This is mm-hmm. amazing. I expected it to be like a season-long arc, and it's tied up in like 3 or 4 episodes, and
yeah,
then they move
and it
on.
Was done.
it's a little bit, the storyline in the comics is a little bit too meaty for just four episodes, and then you're kind of tied off and done. There were still repercussions in the show after that that tie to that event.
Yeah.
But for being as big as the storyline is, I expected a much bigger thing. But it was still, it was fine for TV. But yeah, I agree.
I would say as a close to my initial sentiments here, if the initial attempt at the DCU post Nolan Batman, you know, from Man of Steel on, if they were able to actually achieve what I think they thought they were gonna do from the beginning, once you got to a solo Flash movie or even a Flash sequel, perhaps it would have been better suited for, they could have done a legitimate version of the Flashpoint Paradox, like almost in its entirety. Really, really truthful adaptation of it. And I promise you, if you've never read it, please go read it, because it would have been fucking amazing. There would have never been anything like it ever made. And I'll offer a couple specifics as we talk context when we get to spoilers, but
it features a different version of Batman than we see in this movie.
It would have been a really cool
version.
Yeah, but it also features a different version of nearly every major character in really cool ways.
Right.
But that said, I think the idea of thinking that was going to be the anchor as to where they were going to build the story from, I was hopeful that if it would ever come to light, that it would be something worth seeing. That again, that it wouldn't be a wasted opportunity. That was my hope, I think.
Mike, do you remember how you felt 3 years ago for this movie?
I believe my sentiments were it's going to be a dumpster fire because of how, like, just the way the DCEU had gone and the way that the production and writing and all this had gone, all the stuff you just talked about, I felt like there was no possible way it was going to have a good outcome. I believe that's what I felt at the time, because everything had been so much of a jumbled mess up to that point. I didn't have high hopes for it.
That's the other thing
the Flash
to point. Keep in mind is like, you know, 2016, I think, is when Justice League released.
Yep.
And right when Justice League came out and the movies that followed over the next year, so we'll even say maybe 2017, Warner Brothers kept trying to pivot the entire direction of the DCEU. They didn't know what to do, what characters to focus on, where the story should go, what should connect, what shouldn't. There was no plan, and you could feel it. And this movie was meant to fit in that plan somewhere. It was being conceived, shot, written, all that stuff, when there was no plan. Now, I can get into it with some other stuff I'm going to talk about. It seemed like they wanted it to start, almost restart or kickstart another plan, which, I don't know, I guess from we'll have to wait and see now if this sort of works the way they wanted it to. But there were definitely other versions of this movie that changed dramatically over the last year. And I'll kind of get into a little bit that later.
Yeah, and I think part of my sentiment at the time was also around, like, don't touch Flashpoint, just leave it alone. You can't manage it, you're not going to do it right, you're going to fuck it up, just do some other story. Like, that was kind of where I fell, was like, I just don't want to see them fuck this up so badly. Because Flashpoint, like Josh said, it is such a damn good story. And
yeah,
giving that to a company that had been fumbling things so badly worried me, because it's not just a really good story, it's a complicated story.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't feel like at the time I had very high hopes at all, that because taking on a, you know, a company that had been struggling and giving them a really complicated thing, it just didn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, I felt like it never. It's an important enough story that I think you have to care enough about the characters in the world and stuff that the implications of what changes really hits harder. Like, it didn't feel like this storyline in this movie was earned yet to be the first Flash movie. This felt like Flash 2 or Flash 3. Like, I don't know. I was back then, I was very hesitant, and I didn't expect a lot from this movie. My hype level changed leading into this, and it's something we can get into as we go through the show. So I think that it definitely affected my opinion of the movie a little bit. But from where I was in 2020, I think my expectation level definitely changed between now and then. All right, so one thing and I sort of touched on it, but over the last, we'll say, year or so, Warner Brothers had some shakeups as a company. Flash was originally planned under Toby Emmerich and Walter Hamada. Hamada was head of DC Films at the time. He had plans for this movie to reset the entire DC universe and step away from the Snyderverse. And then Discovery bought Warner Brothers in 2022. Emmerich and Hamada were caught in the crossfire, were ousted from the company. And while new CEO David Zaslav looked for some new blood to run the DC film and entertainment side of things, Michael DeLuca and Pamela Abdi filled the void, had their own idea of what was next for DC. And then in October 2022, James Gunn and Peter Safran were announced as the new co-CEOs of DC, and suddenly all the DC plans shifted again. So us, on this podcast, had speculated what that meant for the currently in-production DC films. Shazam, Fury of the Gods, The Flash, Blue Beetle, Aquaman 2. Early hype around all of these movies, which I believe James Gunn has commented on most of these sort of the same way, and please someone correct me if I'm wrong, but basically he said that all of these could exist with what comes next. That they've sort of been playing fast and loose with what is connected to each other, or even how these movies connect to each other. So if there's no connecting tissue to the old regime, that they could easily fit in the new regime. So, I don't know. It sounds more confusing than it's worse, honestly. And the only connective tissue seems to be characters popping up in other movies, which they've really started to scale back in some of these movies just because they're afraid of what connective tissue could connect to what movies and what that means going forward. Shazam Fury of the Gods, released in March of this year, didn't do well at the box office. Although I think it sucks, but that was kind of expected. However, The Flash seemed to be getting really positive early buzz, as James Gunn had called it, quote, one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen. And from what I was seeing, he's not the only one that said this. I was seeing similar comments online from people who had access to early screenings. So this is again where my hype level started getting up there. After the opening weekend, the hype did not follow this movie. The movie got a B cinema score, Metacritic meta score of 56, Rotten Tomatoes critic score of 66. Audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is a little bit more positive at 85%. The box office seems to have reflected most of the mediocre scores that I was seeing. The movie opened to $55 million domestic. It is currently at $144 million worldwide. For a movie that probably cost twice that to make, I think the opening weekend was expected to do better. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. What the hell happened, and why do you think this movie kind of fell flat?
People have low expectations of the DC universe at this point. You can't continually release,
we don't know what's going on,
disconnected, disjointed, confusing stuff that is very mediocre in a lot of ways and expect people to get on board with all of this, where it's confusing. They don't make the best movies. You've got a star with a lot of fucking problems. And, you know, what was the selling point of this movie? What was it, like, we've seen the trailers. You guys saw trailers now, right? Obviously.
I have not gone back and watched some of the other ones. I still only saw the first trailer, technically. I should go back and watch some of the trailers now because I'm curious how they marketed it, but I haven't yet. No.
So the biggest selling point of this movie was in the trailers, and I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, so I'm not going to say it, but there was one major selling point that they, you know, like it was leaked and revealed and rumored forever that, you know, there was something that was going to be happening in this movie, and that was their big selling point is, oh, look at that. It's in, and people, you know, here in Pittsburgh, it was a bigger deal than it was elsewhere. I'm assuming. So I'm not going to say what it was, but that was like their big selling point. They were really trying to hype that up, and they weren't, I don't know. Like, it just seemed to me like I expected this movie to be bad. I really genuinely expected this movie to be bad. If you guys hadn't said like, oh, we're all going to go as a group and see this Flash movie, I probably wouldn't have even bothered. But it was like, we're going to go as a group and see it together. So I would have just waited for HBO Max, like, or Max, whatever the fuck it's called today.
I'm still going to refer to it as HBO Max. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I would have just waited for it to show up there, but we wanted to do that and record an episode on it, obviously. So I figured, all right, I'll go watch it. And we're not giving thoughts on it yet. We're just talking about why we think it went bad box office. And that would be my biggest thing. They tried to push it. They didn't have a lot of hype points. You've got a lot of problems with the star and a lot of problems with the universe it's coming from. So I think that's your problems.
Josh, what do you think? Can you nail down a reason or two, or your thoughts why this kind of the headlines coming out of the movie was the Flash bombed. I don't think it did terrible. Like 55 million opening weekend, 144 worldwide. That's not bad. That's probably just lower than what they expected. And I should have tried to Google, I guess, what the projected numbers were, but I don't know if they expected to hit like 200 million in opening weekend and they fell flat of that.
I mean, anymore, I'm coming from a very biased position in responding to something like this, because, like, for instance, I'm not seeing the TV spots that might be saying, you know, early critic comments and how it's already being received by those seeing it early. And so therefore I wouldn't have an understanding of how, you know, the general public might be getting exposed to this, because I've continued my, you know, like, media blackout for a lot of things. So no, I never saw trailers. I never saw TV spots, anything like that. I hesitate to use that term fatigue again. I just think people have fallen into ambiguity. They're ambivalent toward a lot of things now, even Marvel to a good extent. I know from a box office standpoint and critically, you know, Guardians has been a high point for the last, say, 2.5 years. But I think it was a combination of things. No one, like you said, no one's really invested in it. I think that the phrase you used about it not being earned yet is maybe more important as an explaining factor than anything else, or at least one that isn't going to be given as much weight as it should be. Because this wasn't Flash 2 and didn't come after Super, you know, Man of Steel 2 and Justice League 2 and Wonder Woman 3 and Aquaman, if they were going to do something much bigger, it would have had to come after all of that. The fact that they did it here, I happen to think the way that they did it worked well. But in order to do it at this point, they needed to do it with story modifications and with certain characters, with different characters, because they couldn't have used other ones yet, because to your point, it would not have been earned with those other characters yet. So they had to make certain changes. I happen to probably be on the higher end with, like, the Rotten Tomato side of things. That I would probably put this up in like a solid B range right now, maybe even a B+. So I think it was, I can't really say, I guess to answer the question, I can't really say why it wasn't.
Well, let me reframe. Do you think this is like superhero fatigue, or do you think this is something about DC and the Flash specifically?
Much more specifically to them. You know, I don't think this movie was ever going to come out and make 150 million opening weekend domestically. Okay. Right. It was not going to break records. It was not going to do that. It's the middle of the summer. Well, summer's about, you know, really beginning right now, but it was the middle of June. The world is just, in all honesty, I think the world, literally the real world, is trying to find its footing again. And pop culture is kind of taking a back seat again. It's receding a little bit into the stability that people are looking for in their regular lives again. And the way that that interacts with the movie going experience, just people didn't care enough. I personally don't think it was a matter of specifically that enough people knew the problems with Ezra Miller and were doing it as like a protest, or they knew about the Flash and were just disinterested. I don't think it was as conscious as any particular thing. I think people just didn't happen to care.
I think I'd slightly disagree that it's not like all entertainment is kind of sailing down and numbers are coming down, because Guardians opened to almost 120 million opening weekend. So it's not like superhero fatigue. It's not like
not entirely, but thinking that. But how many are doing that anymore?
Well, what I would say in this case is you have a character that was introduced. You said Justice League was 2016. That's 7 years ago that people were introduced to Ezra Miller's Flash. And yeah, that movie, for the general audience, is the only version of Justice League they have seen. The general audience has not sat down and watched the four-hour-long Snyder's Cut on HBO Max. One, it's on a specific platform. Two, it's 4 hours long. It's in black and white. Like,
there's a regular version. There's
a color version. My point is, like, it's on a specific platform. It's... It's a very niche thing that exists. So most people have seen the Joss Whedon Justice League, which sucked. And that is their only exposure to Ezra Miller as this character. Why would they come back for seconds?
Yeah.
Seven years later.
I'd argue that he's one of the highlights of that movie. But I guess more to Josh's point, I could see Guardians being the outlier here because Guardians has a following. To Mike's point, too, like... Ezra Miller, there's one movie appearance basically that focuses on him and gives him a little more screen time. He pops up in a couple things, but not a lot of DC stuff. So you're not having a lot of exposure to the character to want to gain a following. And it, like you said, from 7 years ago or whatever, to try to track till now. If this movie would have released in 2020, you probably would have had a better following around this movie because it would have been coming a little bit closer off of Justice League.
It could have helped,
I think. Yeah.
Just to autocorrect a little bit. So I remember you don't really see him per se, but in Batman v Superman, I think even in the theatrical cut, there's a scene where Bruce Wayne is sort of putting together his research, and you get like a cameo of Aquaman. You get a cameo of the Wonder Woman photo from World War One. There's convenience store footage of the Flash, of him like stopping a robbery. So that, and he's just in plain clothes. So you get that in March of 2016. Then there's a very quick cameo, like a flashback cameo of him capturing Captain Boomerang to set up Boomer's role in Suicide Squad later that year.
Yeah.
So those are both 2016. Yeah. Justice League is at the end of 2017. It was like November 2017.
Right?
Yeah. So he doesn't even pop up in Wonder Woman, because of course it takes place in World War One. So you get those two little bites, and then to Mike's point, yes, you get this one theatrical version of him in this very patchworked version of a DC movie in the theatrical version of Justice League, and then right, so it's what, 5.5 years since that last time.
Yeah.
That's a hard chasm to overcome.
I did try to Google some stuff here. Forbes is citing that Flash was projected to earn $70 million opening weekend, so it brought in $55 million. So it was $15 million under projections.
And it's not the worst.
For opening weekend, you know, movies are made and broken opening weekend. So that's
true.
I think a bigger dip than they expected. And if it's any indication how the movie's going to go from here, I guess we'll see. I do think. Just, I guess, putting in my two cents. I think Ezra Miller's bullshit definitely didn't help. Could people have forgotten about that by now? Maybe. It was like, you know, 9 months ago, something since that sort of made headlines, or 6 months, whatever it's been. So there's a chance that people's consciousness just forget about that shit after a while. Another thing that I read, which is a good point that I really didn't even think of. There's a SAG and I don't know if this is an acronym for something else. SAG and AFTRA. Strike authorization in place, which means actors are not permitted to do press in these situations. So there's nothing promotionally pushing this movie right before release. Late night talk shows are shut down because of the writer's strike, so there's no press there. I wouldn't be surprised if most of these stars do not want to be interviewed about this movie outright because of the many questions you think they'd probably get about Ezra Miller's behavior. And then keep in mind, it wasn't until the red carpet event that Ezra Miller even was allowed to show his face. This movie has had such a long road and has been hit with like the perfect storm of bullshit around it. Like, your main star becomes basically unmarketable. You can't promote the movie with the star cast because of ongoing Hollywood strikes. Leadership changes at the studio forced this movie to go through many behind the scenes changes. all while this movie was stuck in development hell for years. So I am not surprised. I'm let's put it this way. I'm more surprised this movie actually released. Considering all this shit, this is a movie that could easily have gotten delayed numerous years if Warner Brothers wanted to really sort of teach Ezra Miller a lesson, but at that point there was probably too much money invested in the movie, because I think it's something we talked about before. They could have just canned them and reshot with a new actor. But at that point, I think the movie was pretty much in the can, and they've already invested close to $200 million in the movie, that it's, you can't, as much as they were looking for tax write-offs, that's not a write-off. That's just a bigger investment to make the movie what it could be. So they just kind of threw their hat in the ring and said, well, this is what we got. Let's just do our best to market it and go from here. And it's the marketing, from what I had seen, didn't promote like, hey, this is an Ezra Miller movie. It promoted, this is the character. Go for the character, the Flash. Don't go to see Ezra Miller. Go for the character. So they tried their best to pivot away from the public persona. So I don't know. It's interesting to me that when all this kind of shit hits the fan and like you see the domino effect of what happens prior to, and then you're left with, oh, okay, now that makes a lot of sense why we ended up here. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that is like, what, like, I don't know. It interests me. I can understand why this movie kind of undersold. It still honestly surprised me, because I think projections going in was gonna exceed the $70 million projection. So I'm actually very surprised it ended up below that. And I'm curious, do you guys think it's gonna rebound? Like, do you think second weekend it's gonna make a decent amount of, or is it gonna lose 60% of the box office like movies typically do in a second weekend? Now keep in mind, Indiana Jones comes out next week. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning is 2 months or 2 weeks after that. So this might have 1 weekend to try to gain some ground back. After that, I don't know what it's going to do when Indy comes out.
I would say it's possible, just because it has had a fairly good reception. You know, like an audience score in the 80s on Rotten Tomatoes is pretty good, given what I expected from it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We're not getting into my opinion yet, so I'm just going to say, that's a lot better than I expected it to do on both the critic and audience rating. So I think there's a chance that it does a little bit better second weekend now that word has gotten out that it's not a complete train wreck.
I was going to say, typically second weekend's word of mouth type of stuff. So
I imagine there's a lot of hesitancy, you know?
Yeah.
And don't forget, even though Indiana Jones also opens 4th of July weekend, not every single person wants to see Indiana Jones and is going to.
Yeah.
4th of July weekend also has several days. And so some people might use that extended time. A lot of people might, you know, have family time to take off Monday as well. So they have a 4 or 5 day weekend. And, you know, one or two trips, you know, extra to the movies for some people. So if they didn't get out already, that might be, you know, the time that they feel, oh, we have some extra days off, we'll catch it then maybe. So yeah, I agree with Mike. I think it's entirely possible. I actually, and I don't know if this is the world we live in anymore, things changed very quickly in the last 2 years, but I feel like this could be one of those that finds an audience later, like after, you know, whatever the modern equivalent of, you know, it found its audience on home video, whatever that is. You know, it goes to Max, it goes to the streamers, Redbox, wherever people could get to it. I think there's a lot here to like, and so regardless of the size of the audience that gets exposed to it in the first couple of weeks, I think eventually over time people will keep telling people, like, that's a pretty solid movie.
So I just, maybe just to spin into that sort of my next question, but, and this is still, again, spoiler free here, but the big question, I guess, for that I'll present to you guys is, after all these like middling box office mediocre reviews, do you think this movie is as bad as the reviews and box office are saying? Josh, I think you're leaning towards no. Mike, I'm not sure where you stand on this.
I mean,
if you agree more with the ratings in box office, or you think it's better or worse than either of those?
Oh, okay. So the way you phrased that the first time confused me, because I don't think anybody's saying it's bad. Like, okay. I don't see, like, you know, like you said, like there's 60 some percent critic, 80 some percent audience, even on Metascore, yeah, a 5 point something that's not terrible because Metascore tends to be lower than the others. Just in general,
I think I'm labeling quote unquote bad, maybe just based on pre movie hype that I was seeing. I expected like A scores in 90s and 80s, and
they
it's
overhyped it
that.
To try. I feel like they overhyped it on purpose to try and get people out to see it. I think that
marketing
that,
push.
Yeah, that I'm not going to consider a marketing push because marketing is always full of shit. Because they have to be. Everything has to be perfect and great. So I'm not going to base it on that. I'll base it on the reviews we have and stuff. Is it better or worse than those? Can you pick one for me to go off of? Because a 5 point something, a 6 point something, and an 8 point something are pretty different themselves. Which one should I try to...
I mean, you could pick one and say, this is my bar. It's better or worse than that or something.
Okay. I would say the audience on Rotten Tomatoes has it about right.
So 85%.
Yeah, an 8, 8.5 okay. Might be where I'm falling for it. It was good, not great.
Okay. All right, then we'll just sort of talk spoiler-free real quick, general thoughts, sort of what did you think of the movie, and then we'll get into spoilers after that. Josh, I'll swing back to you.
So I was fortunate enough to be able to see this about 9 days before the main opening, just from one of the like studio email lists that Sarah and I have been signed up with for years. I was able to go to an early screening, and again, not really knowing. So I had definitely one, if not two, major character appearance involvements spoiled for me in advance, even though I don't watch shit and I don't read articles, I don't look at anything. I couldn't avoid it. Slash, you know, people probably said them casually, and so I knew that stuff going in, but I really hadn't seen a frame of it. I didn't see pictures. I didn't see scenes. So for the most part, I was going in pretty fresh and blind. I gotta say, I kind of immediately dug it after the first viewing. There is something that I told Leslie, her and I went biking the weekend between me seeing it in advance and the main opening. And while we were out, I said, there's a main plot line, a storyline that they use that I thought was going to be like, oh, this is going to be like an act one to act two transition. Then it will go away and move on. And it doesn't. It persists through the entire film from the time it starts. At some point, I got tired of it. But the way that it resolves, you need it to be there. It's necessary. And once you get the resolution that they arrive at, you then see, oh, okay, that was more satisfying. It actually pulled it all together. It was no longer just a plot device. It was the plot.
Okay.
And I appreciated it more. So I didn't necessarily need to marinate on it too long afterward to think, like, I sort of immediately said, walking out, like, that was pretty damn good. Just like from a creative standpoint, take all the other shit aside from it and just think real people had to start with nothing and create something. And from a story idea, from costuming and scene construction and emotional beats, etc., nuts and bolts of it, it was a really successful creative product.
Okay. Mike?
So it was better than I ever anticipated it was going to be, because I definitely anticipated a dumpster fire. That's what I thought it was going to be. Even going into the theater that night, I was like, man, we're going to do this. So be it. So it was definitely a lot better than that. And I think the general story and themes that they go for are really well handled. They are really impactful, important stories to tell, things to talk about, points to make. It's a very real story, even though it's obviously a superhero story about, you know, what it's about. However, there is a lot of movie-making flaws that are not a part of the story that I took so much issue with that I can't feel like it's a great movie. I feel like the story and the way that they tell it is great. Genuinely great. The movie making here is the problem, in my opinion. And we'll, okay, when we get into spoilers, I'll get into why, of course. But for me, there's a lot there where you can tell that maybe there was some budget that wasn't there anymore because of the production issues that happened with this movie, or Ezra Miller causing issues and them saying, don't put any more money into this part of this. Just do it. And those give me serious issues with a movie that should be a better made movie.
Yeah.
In terms of quality. So, yeah.
I guess I'll admit, I kind of came at this from a different angle because I was coming in overly hyped, I think, for this one. And even like coming in with higher expectations, and then I know Josh was coming in with lower expectations, and we talked briefly after he had seen the movie where he was talking about, I'm actually excited to go see it again. And for me, that was like a glowing review that I was like, oh shit, it is that good. And I think I kind of went into it with that. I think it's good. It's probably really good, but I think it's caught in such a weird place that it's hard for me to invest in it the way that I want to. I think because of like the Warner Brothers drama, how uncertain the DC movies are in the grand scheme of the DC movie universe right now, you start to wonder if this movie even matters. And sadly, kind of knowing like what I do and what we'll get into about some of the behind the scenes stuff that shifted, it's hard not to see where this movie pivoted for me. And maybe if I see it a few more times after this, I can just finally take it for what it is. Right now, I'm kind of still stuck on the potential of what it could have been and what it could have set up had the DC universe kind of stuck with the direction that it had picked earlier. So that's kind of my hang up, I think, for a lot of it. I think the cast does really good. Some of the cast we don't get as much of as I would have liked. And I kind of feel bad that they probably will end up as a casualty of this DC regime change. And that kind of just pisses me off in general. There's some really fun Easter eggs in the movie. I think the emotional beats that they go for actually hit surprisingly well. But I mean, for someone that went in kind of convinced this would be one of the greatest superhero movies ever, I walked out just feeling underwhelmed from that bar. So I guess my advice to anybody, I guess, going to see the movie is to not go in with that high of expectations and kind of go in and expecting the dumpster fire. And maybe you really, really enjoy this one. but I think that's all I got for general stuff. You guys ready to get into spoilers? We'll do some spoilery stuff. Get into the meat of this one.
Always. I don't get to watch what I say then. That's the fun part.
All right. Time for some spoilers. If you've not seen The Flash and do not want spoiled, pause this now. Come back after watching the movie. Otherwise, you can be sure that we'll be spoiling some story beats, cameos, other cool surprises. Listen on at your own risk. This is your last chance. Spoilers to follow.
Wee-oo, wee-oo. Spoiler. Wee-oo, wee-oo. Spoiler.
You know, something like that.
All right. So I'm going to start actually with the way this movie ends, which for, you know, we're in spoilers. So at the end of the movie, Barry thinks he resets the timeline, gets his dad out of jail, goes to meet his friend Bruce Wayne at the courthouse, only to find out that it's not his Bruce Wayne. Instead, it's fucking George Clooney. Now, I have more that I want to dive into about this, but what did you guys think about that moment? Did this surprise you, catch you off guard?
Very much.
Josh, I'll go with you.
Yeah, very much, and I loved it.
Mike, what about this moment for you?
I love that they got George Clooney back, but they should have got Val Kilmer instead.
That's the only one where I was like, man, I'm missing Val Kilmer at this point too. Like,
he was a better Batman. Like, let's just be real about this. Like, it was.
But I mean, they can't get Val Kilmer, I think, for obvious reasons. Like, it's he can't even talk, so it's very hard
did
to get him.
Have to.
Well, true.
Like, they had him on the phone. You know, is the part of it. So that could have been its own thing.
I was going to say, for me, it wasn't even like, oh, good, I'm so fulfilled that they found a way to shoehorn Clooney in. It wasn't that. It was just I didn't see it coming whatsoever. And the fact that it was him was great.
And they made, like, the phone, I'm pretty sure, was Keaton. Like, I'm pretty, like, the voice on the phone sounded like Keaton to me. Like, it was going to be Keaton coming out of the car.
I mean, I turned to Josh. I said, it's Keaton, right? Like, we're going to get Keaton. Keaton survived, right? And then he wouldn't look at me in the eyes at all during that scene. Because he knew.
I was staring forward. Now, I will say, like, this time, since I knew that was coming, I tried to listen to the voice better this time. I'm pretty sure it was Clooney, but because your expectation for how the rest of the film has played out, and their voices aren't materially different enough unless, you know, Michael Keaton is sort of doing That's a true. Character. If you don't even know it's going to be one of the two of them, you would have no idea. Right?
That's fair.
Like, you would not be able to pick the voice out. I will say, I think it was a better choice. Like, I don't know if they tried to incorporate Christian Bale, for instance. I think it was a better choice to go with Clooney. Like, he's the one that no one cares about.
Yeah, true.
Like, Batman and Robin, and this isn't going to redeem Batman and Robin by any means. Like, it's not going to have that effect.
That can't, but it was, no, nothing can.
Right, so it was better, like, it was better to pull such a minute detail rather than, okay, the easy thing is it's Michael Keaton. The easy thing is it's Christian Bale or Robert Pattinson even, right? It's, you bring out Clooney. Who the hell remembers Clooney anymore?
Yeah. So there, I wanted to sort of go back to what I sort of talked about before in the whole regime change thing, because there's a lot to dig in here from with an article that I read, and I'm going to spin it back to a question with Clooney when we get there. But just for background for anybody that didn't see this, I didn't post anywhere because it has spoilers in it. So maybe give it a little bit and I can put it up on the Facebook page if you're interested in reading the article, but I'm going to try to summarize for you. There's an ending. The ending of the movie went through different iterations over the course of the last year. As I mentioned, Walter Hamada was the guy who had a plan for DC prior to the Discovery acquisition of Warner Brothers. His plan was to have this movie reset the entire DC universe. This would lead to another Flash movie and eventually culminate in Crisis on Infinite Earths. That was what was being rumored, and that was the plan. With that in mind, the movie was originally conceived and shot with Supergirl and Michael Keaton's Batman meeting Barry outside the courthouse. It was an ending that was screen tested several times, and honestly, like I said, was the ending that I was expecting they were leading towards. I thought that's where the movie was steering, which I think makes sense given that Keaton's Batman was meant to have a cameo in Aquaman 2. That was cut. He was meant to be a big part of the Batgirl movie. That movie got canceled off of tax write-offs and will never see the light of day. And the article that I was pulling this information from discussingfilm.net, posted, I actually did post this on the Facebook page, sorry. But it goes through all these and then goes on to say that Keaton was reportedly supposed to be involved in a Batman Beyond movie that would have been written by Christina Hodson, who wrote The Flash. All of that to me sounds awesome, and I'm upset that none of that is happening. So that's a little bit of my bitterness there. And then we get to the Discovery merger with Warner Brothers. Walter Hamada is out. While David Zaslav looks for someone to take over DC, Michael DeLuca and Pamela Abdi filled the void, and suddenly they changed the plans again. So a new ending was conceived and shot in September of 2022. It was said to have Sasha Calls, is it Kal-El? How do you say her last name? Sasha Calls? Calls?
I mean, it's not Kal-El, that's Superman.
Yeah.
Would you say it was C-A what?
C-A-L-L-E.
Kale.
Sasha Kale.
Okay. Kale. Yeah.
She's also Colombian, so try that.
I'm terrible at names. We already know this. Her Supergirl, Michael Keaton's Batman, Henry Cavill's Superman, who at this point would have been coming off his cameo from Black Adam, Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, since Wonder Woman 3 was still on the table at this time. And there were the article mentions that a planned Supergirl movie was at that point being scrapped, but they were open to having her pop up in other movies going forward. So basically this was the catch-all of, hey, we don't know where we're going. We want to put these cards on the table in case we want to come back to them sometime later. And then the third shakeup happened. So in November of 2022, David Zaslav announced that James Gunn and Peter Safran would run DC Studios. And again, the plan shifted. Now it seemed like the DC universe was being reset, and the ending that had Cavill's Superman and Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman didn't fit Gunn and Safran's plans. They didn't want to go that direction, so things had to change. Cavill seemed to be hyping up another Superman movie. That was quickly brushed aside. Cavill was told he's not coming back as Superman. Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 3 fell apart. Doesn't look like Gal Gadot will be returning either. I don't think that's confirmed, but with Wonder Woman 3 kind of brushed aside and not being in active development anymore, it's very unclear if she can come back at all, especially if Patty Jenkins is not involved in anything going forward. I don't know how that's going to go. So while another ending was scrapped, they liked the idea of having Barry thinking he fixed everything, but having, quote, the rug pulled out at the last moment. So they kept asking, how many Batman can we get? So the idea of Clooney kept coming back. They made a cut of the film. It made its way to Clooney. He agreed to be in it. In January of 2023, they shot the scene with Clooney. From then on, that scene was kept a secret. Wasn't even shown to test audiences. It was not shown to the public with a cut of the film until the press week of June 4th, and the movie premiered June 12th. All of this, I think, is just an example of the whirlwind of shit that went on behind the scenes of this movie. And while I think this cameo was used well, I also feel like it ends the movie on more of a joke and has less of a potential of what's next. Because if Clooney is now established as Batman, and somehow this section of the DC Universe lives on, does that mean we're going to get Clooney back as Batman in a potential Flash sequel? Or do you see this as a one-off joke and that's it?
Yeah, it's one-off.
This is it? The only appearance for Clooney, and then they'll just do something else from here?
Yeah.
I mean, would they recast Batman again if he shows up in this section of the DC?
They're already going to. They just announced Machete is directing Batman Brave and the Bold. So I'm going to stop you there.
Because the difference, in my mind, different That's casting Clooney. Means different multiverse. Like, if this movie sets up the multiverse, so they could do that. That's why we're going to still get Robert Pattinson's Batman 2. Like, that's happening. He's not going to be playing in the universe with Flash. That's its own separate thing.
So if they do
a Flash 2 and want to bring Bruce Wayne back, who's Bruce Wayne? Are we going to see Clooney, or is it going to be some? Or they just cut Bruce Wayne out?
I think they either do just that not or deal with it. I think this is also a recognition, regardless of the post-credits scene, that this is the end for the Flash. Regardless of James Gunn even saying, like, well, potentially we could still salvage some of these things to move forward, I don't think it matters. I don't think there's implications.
So you don't think a Flash 2 is happening? There's no sequel potential at all?
And even if there is, I don't think any of this is really going to matter. If there's any continuation of Ezra Miller as the Flash with these continuing intersections of characters, I don't think the shakeout of Batman in this is going to have anything to do with it whatsoever.
Okay.
I agree, because if this movie was out there setting records and busting the box office, they might be willing to gamble on Ezra Miller again. It is not doing that. They're not going to gamble on this person again. This person is a potential problem. Okay, listen, Ezra, get your help. Seems like you're doing better right now than you have in a long time. Stay on your meds. It's cool, but they're not going to take a risk on you again. You're too much of a risk. You didn't kill the box office. They're not going to do any more of this. They'd be crazy. It would be such a bad investment.
Going into this and maybe coming out of it, I think, again, just because I expected it to make more money, I think in my mind was thinking, okay, this has sequel potential. What do they do with a sequel? Where does this fit in the DC universe going forward? But yeah, I think a lot of that, like you guys have said, is based on box office. Same thing with Shazam. They've said before that if Shazam 2 came out and lit the box office on fire, made a bunch of money, they would probably move forward with a sequel. It didn't do that. So Shazam is probably dead too. And with this movie, if it doesn't rebound very well in the next couple of weeks, I think I agree that I think there's probably no sequel here. It would be very easy to just tie off Ezra Miller's Barry Allen here and just be done. I think it for Warner Brothers, because you don't know if they're going to go off the deep end again. So it's just easier to just kind of put the end cap on it and just move on.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't even think it's just a Ezra Miller problem. You started the show by detailing almost 10 years of development shit. And we constantly talk ad nauseum about the breakdown of the DCU every single time they try to do something. It's just a culmination of all that. And there's no reason.
So again, it comes down to where does this fit going forward?
Yeah, there's just no reason to try to pick the pieces up just for the hell of it to keep something going. They eventually got to this point. They made something that in and of itself stands really well. And as I said, I truly think it's a very creative product, but it doesn't need to go on. And there's probably not a reason for it to go on to serve whatever other goals that they want to move forward in the future with. So
yeah,
I don't see anything in this movie having any impact on anything coming after.
Okay. Yeah. I think I could live with it more if this is the end of the Flash and we end with the joke of George Clooney coming back for just one little cameo and that's it. I think I could accept that a little bit more. If there's hilarious. Any potential at all for this to continue on and they want to continue this section of the DC universe with Ezra Miller's Barry and what they sort of did from here, that's where I'd love to see Clooney come back and actually do something as Batman. Like, if that's the direction they want to go with this, how this movie ends, and it wants to continue this part, I think he needs to come back. And I think it might actually be cool to see him come back. Given to be in a movie that's hopefully better than what Batman and Robin is, I think you can only go up from there. So give him a chance to redeem himself too. I think that'd be great.
Give me 50 bucks. I'll make a better movie.
But yeah, I think with the mix of where DC is going and the plan that James Gunn laid out, it's very difficult to see where a Flash sequel would fit into that, especially considering that universe is going to have their own version of Batman. We're still going to have Robert Pattinson's Batman. And then to possibly have Clooney be a third version of Batman all happening within 10 years, that's going to confuse the fuck out of everybody. It's going to be confusing enough
needed.
As it is.
It's not needed.
Yeah. So the other Batman we get Keaton back as Batman, and we get Sasha Cal's Supergirl. What did you guys think of those characters? I think the marketing was pushing hard for Keaton's Batman.
Yes, that's what I was referring to. Yeah. That was their marketing ploy, because Ezra Miller was not marketable. Their marketable was Keaton's back as Batman.
So, Mike, what did you think of Keaton back and our this version of Supergirl that we get?
I think Keaton reaffirmed himself as the best Batman. In this movie, he was fan-fucking-tastic in every aspect in this movie. And I really hope this isn't the last chance we get at this. I hope they can talk him into something to do more Batman, because he is just so damn good at it.
What's that mean? Like, they had him locked in for other stuff and they scrapped all those plans. Like,
just give him his own movie, give him a trilogy. I don't care. Just more of it, please.
I think the one thing coming out of this is that granted, I haven't looked at the reviews and seen what people are saying about the movie, but for me, I actually think I enjoyed the Batman stuff more than the Flash stuff. I came out of this really enjoying the Keaton stuff out of this. And, you know, hearing the news that Muschietti is going to do a Batman movie made complete sense, because it seemed like he gave that character so much love and attention in this movie that it's like, okay, that fits. I understand. Yep. I can see that.
Yeah. Whatever it takes to get more Michael Keaton as Batman, do it. I don't care. As far as the Supergirl, she was great. It was good. I have no complaints. I don't think she stood out as exceptional, like, oh man, I got to see more of her as Supergirl. She was good. I think she did a really good job with what she was given. It was a kind of a versatile role to be put into, even in its small pieces. There was a lot for her to do and a lot they were asking of the actress in those moments. And she did a good job. The writing for the character, I think, was kind of bland. I don't think that's on her. I just feel like the way that they set it up and handled the character's presence was not as fun as it could have been.
I mean, she definitely doesn't get enough to do.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't show up to like the last third of the movie. And by then, it's just a lot of action and barely any dialogue and character moments for her that I feel bad for her, because I think she probably signed on to this thinking, oh, I'm going to be in more movies going forward. I have the potential to pop up here. She probably signed on thinking she was going to get her own movie at that point.
Right.
And now she's relegated to 15 minutes of screen time and her character dies at the end.
Yeah. And
like, that sucks.
I agree. But yeah, like, an enjoyable presence nonetheless. I think she did a good job. I just don't think the writing team handled it well.
Yeah. Josh, what do you think?
I guess I agree with those sentiments, but I would go the other direction as far as my reaction of wanting to see more of her. I loved that actress. I don't know what it was. I think it was the fact that the character begins at the point where you find her and then has to proverbially travel a very far distance in a short amount of time. Every moment she was on, I was like, man, she's doing interesting things. This is not like the basic, easy, I'm the hero, I'm the woman of steel, I'm this. Like, there was some play that she had to give there, and she had to have conflict. She had to be a badass. She had to,
I don't know. I really dug her. I was really into that Supergirl. That was really cool. I liked that a lot. The Keaton of it all, I was happy with. I think, I don't know what, even if you had tried to ask me ahead of time what I thought the Batman character's role in this was going to be and how integral and what they would do, etc. I don't know what I would have answered, but I think I found that after seeing it, it was not anything that I had previously occurred to me. So the way that Batman was utilized and Michael Keaton playing that role, it didn't actually impact me nearly as much as I thought it was going to. Like, I knew, okay. I knew from the get-go I wasn't going to suck it up just on face value of nostalgia. Like, it was cool. I'm glad. Am I happy that we got a, do you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts line. Am I happy that happened? Of course I am.
Felt a little forced, but we'll take it.
But correct. But I didn't have as this did not, and it's fine. It didn't have to. This did not simply be, oh my God, Batman is Michael Keaton is on screen, so this is the best thing that's ever happened by definition. It's fine. I enjoyed it. It was good. I am glad it exists. It's better than it not existing. But yeah, it just didn't have that like world-changing impact to me of like 30 some years later, Batman is back. It's okay. But overall, I really dug it. I'm eager to get into some of the other story discussions after I hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed seeing both of them. Like I said, I really enjoyed the Batman stuff a lot. When Keaton finally shows up on screen as like old disgruntled Bruce Wayne, all I kept thinking was, give me the fucking Batman Beyond movie because this is what I want. and, you know, more confirmation that that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. It just makes me sad. Sasha in Supergirl, I really liked her. I thought she did really good. I just wanted more. And I'm sad that it seems like, really, I guess both of their characters are basically killed off because they're a victim of, like, WB bureaucracy, and I hate it. Like, they're not dead because the story demanded it. They're dead because they needed a tax write-off for fucking Batman movies, and they don't know where they're going from here, so they just want to kill the characters off because they don't want to use them going forward. That's fucking stupid. So, that's just stuff that makes me sad, and depending on where we get a couple years from now with the DC slate and what comes next, I could probably get to a point where I accept this a little bit more, but I feel like I'm grieving for these characters and it just makes me mad. I mean, were you guys surprised they died? Like, I didn't think the movie was going to go that way. I really thought the whole point of the movie was going to be this redeeming factor where they would come back and be fine at the end. And the fact that they weren't, and we'd never got a resolution there of like this big reveal of them being okay, kind of actually surprised me that they went that route.
I mean,
well, I think it depends real quick, because the even in that way, the quote, the world that the story took place in, the alternate reality, the alternate universe, they still would have died in there. This would have been other versions of them another timeline, because it the only way that the resolution happened was by letting that reality run its course, which results in their death. So you wouldn't have been writing the characters off and those actors inhibiting the roles entirely, granted, but those versions of those characters in the universe that they're fighting Zod, they would still die.
Okay, so with that in mind, we could hopefully just spin it where the universe that Barry ends up in at the end of the movie, those character, I guess Keaton's character doesn't, but maybe Sasha Supergirl still exists in that world, we just haven't seen them yet.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I can sort of buy that.
I mean, in the most minute theory, yes.
if as long as they exist somewhere in my mind in that world, I could it redeems a little bit for me.
Possibly.
Mike, go ahead.
I would say going into it and getting toward the end of the movie, I wasn't expecting them to die because I didn't know what the moral of the story that they were going for was yet. Their deaths fit within the moral of the story. So they make sense to happen because they fit within that. But going into it, was it a surprise that they chose to kill them off? Yes. But once I understood the moral, I wasn't upset about it.
Gotcha. Anything you want to spin off of from there? I think the next thing I was going to lead to was just the cameos, but if you got something you want to spin to, go for it.
I can spin right off of it into the moral of the story.
Okay, and let's go.
One of the things that pissed me off in terms of movie making, because right up, as you said, that scene with Clooney was filmed in January of this year, so it wasn't really considered much a part of the story as they were writing it and as intending it. It was part of a thing to add a scene for the hell of it. And part of my biggest problems with how they end the movie is that Barry doesn't learn his fucking lesson. And he goes back and alters something again anyways without thinking about it again anyways. Because why? I don't know. He didn't learn his lesson. What the hell was that? Why would he go back and change something again? He already learned this lesson once. Why is he doing it? I get why. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand why. He's trying to save his dad. I get it. But you just learned from trying to save your mom how fucked up that can make things. So you're going to just, oh yeah, no, it's just a can, so maybe it won't fuck. What? No, stop. This is stupid. You're an idiot. So in other words, like, the character didn't grow for me, and that was a problem. It showed up until that point that Barry decides to change things for his dad. It looks like, man, he's grown. He's going to learn. The moral of this story is learn to deal with loss. Learn to accept loss. Learn that you can't change the past. Stop living in it. Live in the moment. Live in the future. Try to make your own world better as it is. And stop trying to rework what's already happened or relive it and torture yourself in ways that you shouldn't. And it seems like he learns that. And then he gets back to his own reality. And he's like, but what if I just do something different than I did last time and fix things? And it's like, fuck, he didn't learn. And that pissed me off a lot because it just canceled the character growth. So yeah, that's one of the things I was talking about that was like movie making, not necessarily because the story was bad, because if they end the story where they should have, it comes out as an excellent moral and lesson to learn about life in general that we all need to know. And they do it in such a way throughout the whole story where he's learning to deal with himself literally through the whole movie and having this inner monologue that's really an outer monologue, but it is an inner monologue because it's him talking to himself and really analyzing his own self-worth and value socially and why people like him or don't like him. And he's getting to see it firsthand and grow as a person, as a human, grow his own character. And it was so well done to just fuck it up at the end like that was like, why do that?
I think, I don't know if this will save it for you, but maybe if I just kind of play devil's advocate a little bit. I agree with you that the moral of the story is, you know, accept the loss. There's things you can't change. You just have to accept them and move on. But I also think there's stuff in life where almost like you can change what you can change, right? They're trying to play it where there's still some things you can affect in life to make a positive change. They're just not playing around with the butterfly effect of if I move cans from this shelf to that shelf, what does that do to the rest of the world? Apparently it just makes Bruce Wayne look different.
That we know so far, we don't have... Right. You know, like, what else did he change?
So they just picked, like, a minute change to just kind of say, well, there are some things in life that you can affect, that you can change for positive ways.
Wasn't the point of it that the past isn't one of them? Wasn't that part of it, you can't change the past, so stop trying?
I think there's, well, I guess, yeah, a lot of it. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm seeing it more of, like, there are major things that happen in life, loss especially, that you... Things that you can't change, faded events that can't change. This is what the movie kind of points towards.
Right.
But yeah, I think they're trying to play the can thing and getting his dad out of jail and stuff is just like, I guess, a minute change, something that can actually be affected without messing up the grand scheme of things. Again, this is me just kind of speculating and trying to argue why the movie kind of lets it go. Buy it if you want to. That's the best explanation I got.
I feel like coming out of what he did the first time, he should have known better than to try again. And we don't see the full ripple effect of what he caused by doing it in what we see at the end of the movie. We just see that, oh, things are different. He didn't perfect it. There's a different fucking Batman. What else is different?
Yeah.
What's going to happen? We don't know. That might not even be Batman. That might just be Bruce Wayne. There may be no Batman because of what he did. We don't know at all. So
let's hope for that Flash 2.
Yeah, well, I don't want an answer after that. That's what pissed, like...
Based on their exchange, the very specific words that they use, so Michael Keaton's explanation, his Batman explanation, is you create a fulcrum in time. You change everything on both sides of that point that you're altering. So you might be able to say, yeah, maybe there isn't a Batman in this new universe where George Clooney is. And to the point that they make when they see Michael Keaton, they're like, oh, you're a different age than my Batman was where I left, blah, blah, blah. But when he says to George Clooney when he gets out, I think he says, aren't you Batman or aren't you Bruce Wayne, whatever he says. I think Clooney's response is something like, are you kidding? Are you serious? Something like that. He does not affirm that he is. He affirms he's Bruce Wayne. He does not affirm he is Batman.
So you could spin it either way. Either he's asking, like, are you joking? Why do you know this? Or, no, I'm not. Why are you asking me this question? That's a stupid question.
Correct. Why are you asking me something that is, you obviously know, because we're buddies and we're in the Justice League together?
Right, right.
Or, obviously, you know I'm not. Why? Yes. So, there maybe that was intentional ambiguity.
Yeah, I could see that. Josh, you have anything to add for the moral center of the story? I don't know if you fall one way or the other.
Not necessarily on that side, but since you mentioned moving on to cameos, some things I would like to bring up before we spin to that. I was really geeking the hell out over a bunch of stuff I was seeing as the movie was going on. So, and part of it is because finally this year, after waiting like years and years to think I was going to pick it up watching them with somebody else, since January, I've gotten through about 80% of the entire DC animated movie catalog. So there's around like 50 of those right now. I've gotten through about 40 of them. So,
oh, I realized there was that many.
Yeah, they make a lot of those.
I mean, they've been putting them out since, I think the first one was like 2006 or 7, and ever since then, like every year they kind of amp up. They're like, even during COVID, they were putting out like 2 or 3 a year.
Okay.
But there's a lot of rich story history in there. There's a lot of really cool stuff. And I'm glad that I did that just coincidentally, because there's a lot of storylines that I think they drew from little pieces out of this movie. So I mentioned in the pre-spoiler area, some of the like traditional Flashpoint Paradox storylines. Real quick, I'll summarize that. I know we've done it on past shows, but really for listeners, here's what happens. Barry Allen conceives that he thinks he can save his mother's life by going back to the past, stopping her murder, which actually you find out is the Reverse Flash, Eobard Thawne. There's a whole thing. That's what most of the TV show is based off of, actually. But it creates, right, this ripple effect, a butterfly effect, a whatever timeline effect. He goes back to his what he thinks is his present, only to find out that things are fucked, to say the least. Some of the coolest aspects of it, the biggest selling point of that creative idea to me, in the new reality he's created by stopping his mother's murder when he was a child, that took place when he was a child, Bruce Wayne as a boy is the one who is killed in Crime Alley, not his parents. As a result, his dad, Thomas Wayne, creates the persona of Batman as a vengeance and revenge to his murdered son. And the impact of the event drives his mother insane, and she is that reality's Joker. The first time I saw that in the animated movie, because I never read the book before the first time I saw it, I was sold. from that moment on. Like, everything beyond that was great. It gets to the point where Wonder Woman and Aquaman are literally warring all over the globe. It is Atlantis versus Themyscira on land, and they are, like, destroying the world. Wonder Woman ends up killing Aquaman in like, single battle. Like, the world goes to shit in a handbasket. And the ultimate resolution is Barry has to basically fix his mistake. That he, you know, what he comes to realize was a mistake by changing the past. There's a couple things in there that they borrowed from. So you have the basic idea of him trying to reset a timeline to save his mother. That's the crux of the action. So that's the main thing of that storyline that's obviously present here. The other really cool thing that I did not even conceive they were going to do was in the middle of the movie, after they rescue Supergirl, the whole experiment of Bruce Wayne in the Batcave trying to help him recreate the experiment, which is interesting because in this movie, he already has another one of him, a younger version of him that he's with, who has his speed, has his powers. That part is not an aspect of the story, the actual book storyline, but them recreating the experiment with the lightning and the chemicals, that is part of it. And it's really badass that they put that in, even to the point where he has to do it twice. So they do the experiment once, he gets ripped to shit. In the book, he's basically like unconscious for a couple of days, wakes up and is almost like scarred, like third degree burns all over his body from lightning and everything. And it didn't really take. And he says immediately to Bruce Wayne, "Take me outside. We have to do it again." And in here, they don't actually get to do it twice technically because the machinery breaks, but he says, "No, stop, go again." In this version, Supergirl takes him up into the atmosphere and they blink away as the lightning hits him again, and then it's shown to work. I loved that idea. I love that they included that, and not just that, oh, we set up a thing and it was a wild ass idea and oh, look, it worked. No, the fact that he got electrocuted with chemicals and all that shit, and it didn't work the first time. And they still continue the moment of, no, I have to get through this. I don't even know if it's going to work, but try again. I love that they included that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some other quick points that they borrowed from other stories. There's one of the Superman stories called Red Sun, S-O-N. And the idea is instead of landing in Kansas, Kal-El lands in Soviet Russia and is raised as a Soviet citizen and then eventually as a Soviet agent. You know, he is the man of Russia. He's not the man of truth, justice in the American way. He's a Soviet. A piece of that I think that's basically where you get a little bit of the fact that that's where Supergirl is being held, right? They have to go to Russia to get her because that's where she landed. We learned that.
Yeah, I figured that was meant to be an homage to that storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And that's really the only kind of piece of that I saw. But the fact that even her, like Clark is not here, but that's where she landed when she hit Earth. Then the last piece was from The Dark Knight Returns. They inverted it. So in The Dark Knight Returns, I think it's part two, Batman liberates Clark from a U.S. holding cell, but it's kind of the same idea that the Russians did to Supergirl in this one, that Superman never was allowed to become Superman yet. He was found, he was studied, probably realized what he may be able to become, so he was always kept like underground, in darkness, in isolation, in, you know, 8-layer holding cells and all that. And once he's able to be liberated by Batman, that very like masticated version of him getting exposed outside and slowly just coming to strength in the sun, they give that to Kara here. You know, they invert that. They get her out of Russia and they put her in the sun and then she goes ballistic. I loved that.
Yeah.
I think it worked really well. That's it.
Okay. I do have one other personal thing before we get to the cameos.
Yeah,
it ties right into the cameos. Because I had said there was things about movie making that pissed me off and upset me and made this movie less than it could have been. One of them is the CGI work in some of the scenes was god-awful. And I mean just straight bad. Like, not at all acceptable for a movie of this kind of budget, and I'm sure it had to do with them cutting off funding for it because of what was happening with Ezra Miller and not having faith in the movie. But when he is going through the process of learning that he can move through the time force, that's what it's called, right?
Speed force.
Yeah, I don't know why. He's always moving through the speed force, and as you see the stuff around him, it's all so badly done. I feel like they put some work into the cameo portion of that we get at the very end of the movie to make things look better, but the other moments of that were just so horrible to look at. It took me completely out of the movie, and I'm like, this looks like a video game from 2007. What is going on?
Yeah, I don't know why they chose, like, weird CG effect instead of just filming the actors in those scenes and just having them as still images that move through. Like, that would probably look better, unless they tried that and it didn't look good, so they put money in the CG. I don't really know. It's an odd choice.
Yeah, that drove me in. Like, the fight scenes looked gorgeous and everything. Like, a lot of the special effects in the final battle there were awesome.
Yeah.
That fight specifically with the two flashes zipping all over the place and doing their thing was fucking cool. One of the most fun fight scenes I've watched in a superhero movie or any movie in a while, honestly. It was really that good.
I like that. Like, our Flash kind of gave the new Flash almost like the pep talk that Ben Affleck's Batman gives Flash in Justice League when he's just completely overwhelmed with what's going on.
Just save one.
Yes, just start with one and go from there.
Yeah.
Like, that was a cool little...
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know if it was meant to be that, but that's the way I took it.
Yep. I think they were going for that. And it worked, because he didn't know this version of Barry is not a charismatic speaker. You know,
right.
So him just using what he's already been told makes sense for the character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, just some of like the editing there pissed me off. But in general, I would praise some of the CG they did and some of the work they did is amazing. And that really does stand to separate the bad stuff as even worse.
Yeah.
Because they're really closely together, too, in some of that. Like, so, yeah. But yeah, that ties into the cameos. So the worlds are crashing together, and then we get all these cameos toward the end, in addition to other cameos. So I'll let you kick off from there.
I mean, that was kind of much it. Like, just, you know, the Chrono Ball sequence, I think, was labeled as, like, the end, where we're seeing the different worlds start to crash together. We get glimpses of who's on these other worlds. I talked about it, I think, before the show, before we started recording. One of these was spoiled for me, and that was the Nick Cage one. Like, that... There, it was a stupid fucking thing. I have my, like, morning routine where I just tell Google to, like, play me the news. And I had a story from I had IGN as, like, one of the sites that it goes through news. And this is literally 3 weeks before the movie opens. And I'm half asleep in the morning just hearing stuff in the background. And I started hearing the word, I heard Nick Cage, I heard referencing Death of Superman Lives, and then I heard The Flash. And those were the only pieces I kind of put together. And I was like, wait, does that mean Nick Cage is in The Flash? And I said, motherfucker, I swear to God, if this is right, I'm going to be so fucking pissed off. I very quickly took IGN off of my morning routine. I'm like, you're done. You motherfucker, I don't know what kind of news etiquette you have. 3 weeks before the movie opens, you're talking about cameos in the movie. And since Josh had an early screening, I think the last time we did a podcast, I just asked yes or no, is Nick Cage in the movie? He said yes. And I was like, ah, but... I just at that point I just wanted confirmation. So that was kind of ruined. It was
not ruined for me.
To be fair, I thought it was going to happen a different I thought it was going to happen a different way. And I told this to Josh, is that because like Burton was involved in the Nick Cage Superman movie in the 90s, it was meant to sort of happen after Burton did Batman. I honestly kind of thought that Nick Cage was meant to exist as Superman in the world with Michael Keaton's Batman. I thought he was just going to show up in the third act of the movie and like bail them out or do some kind of quick cameo there at the end. So the fact that he kind of just showed up in another world existing was, that part was a surprise to me, like how he came in. But yeah, it was still cool to see. And I know Josh was wondering if I would get the reference that happened, and yes, it did.
I love that. Beyond the Nick Cage of it, the fact that they also put him with the giant spider, just it made my year. It put such a smile. All right, so real quick for listeners, if you don't know what that
is. Yeah, give some backstory for people that don't know what we're referring to.
So the first time I heard about this is in the early 2000s. Kevin Smith did a bunch of college speaking engagements. So he went on like a college speaking tour. They recorded a lot of it. They made a DVD of it. They released it as An Evening with Kevin Smith. He tells this story during a Q&A. And actually, I think it even came from a student in like 2002, specifically asking about hearing that, like, oh, a few years ago, weren't you working on a Superman movie? I don't know how people knew that shit at that time. Yeah, the internet existed, but really, was it the internet? But he goes through this whole story of meeting with the producer, John Peters, on Superman, what was supposed to be Superman Lives. Kevin Smith wrote a version of the script for that movie. Once Tim Burton came in, it was going to be completely scrapped and he was going to do something else, but a treatment and a version that Kevin Smith wrote, John Peters, the producer at Warner Brothers, absolutely wanted Superman to fight a giant spider in the third act. I don't know if he necessarily said mechanical per se, but it was a giant spider. So 26 years after he writes this script that never sees the light of day, this movie that never gets made, 20 years after he's doing this college engagement tour where this story first comes into the public consciousness, they paid that off. They paid that, and there, you have to know that. You have to literally know that Kevin Smith told that story, and that is the background of it. Because he also then says, maybe this is where like the robotic aspect of the spider we see comes in. He then ends the story he tells on that DVD by saying that like 2 years later, after Superman Lives went away, John Peters was a main producer on Wild Wild West, which culminates in a giant mechanical spider.
That's the part of the story that I remembered, and I just was like, was he the producer of that? So I just had to look it up, yes. And yes, he is listed, yes, John Peters as a producer on Wild Wild West.
So maybe that's why in this you get Nicolas Cage with a giant spider, which is mechanical, all those pieces together. That was my joke. That was a joke for me. And I appreciated the freaking hell out of that so much.
That attention also understood
it was
that
it was the suit too. Like it was the suit that Nick Cage has pictures of. They're online of him in that suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like the memes that people have made about it even. Like it was spot on, exactly what you would expect. And you know, for the Nicolas Cage lovers out there, it was a hell of a moment to just get him actually there flying, beautiful locks.
Long hair and all.
Yeah. The beautiful locks just flowing in the wind. It's just like, damn, we could have had that, and we didn't.
And I believe this is one of the movies we talked about on like the superhero movies that could have been episodes that we've done.
Yeah,
I'm almost sure positive we brought this up for those.
Yep.
Any other cameos from the Cronenball stuff that stuck out to you? Because we get like,
I mean, seeing
what, Christopher Reeve,
you get Christopher Reeve, you get George Reeve as well.
Yeah.
And you get, Adam West,
Batman. And yeah.
It actually disappointed me that we didn't get Kevin Conroy in some way, just a little, tip of the cap to him, because it could have
been
just
like
there.
A voice you hear in passing, like, I am vengeance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just something for him, just because. Obviously, you know, rest in peace, man. That you're Batman still. Like, you're still the Batman we grew up with alongside Keaton. But
I am disappointed we didn't get any love for Grant Gustin. I really thought they were going to show us another Flash there, because he, how many seasons was Flash on TV? Nine seasons.
Yeah. I'm finishing it right now. This actually after I was 2 years behind, and after seeing my advanced screening, I'm like, I need to go back and finish the show, which I also wanted to double check. The CW, when they did their Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover in like season 6 or 7, they brought Ezra Miller on.
Oh yeah.
So Ezra Miller's Flash,
which is a great fucking moment. Oh, got to lost be my on mind there, at that moment.
Which actually, yeah, it was utilized very well. It was funny. I think I went back to look at something that within like the Justice League movie, especially, there's no moment where anyone calls him the Flash. He's never referred to as the Flash. So the scene that they write for his appearance on the CW show, the exchange between him and Grant Gustin, Grant Gustin's Barry mentions the name the Flash. And then Ezra Miller takes away like, oh, that's a good name. As if that's where he got the idea of going forward. And yeah, I thought the only nitpick thing I'll really say, yeah, I think it was pretty shitty for Warner Brothers not to give any love whatsoever to any of the actors, especially Grant Gustin, whatsoever in this, even just a fleeting image as it passed by,
right.
Nothing, no acknowledgement.
Played the character for 9 years on television really well, in my opinion, the superior Barry Allen that we've gotten in some form of entertainment right now. I mean, the last 4 or 5 seasons of that show were kind of rough, but he was great in the role. And yeah, the fact that they did cross over with Ezra on TV, just throw them a bone and give him something for the movie, at least, because it's coming right on the heels of him ending a 9-season run as the Flash. Like, just give him something to go out on. I don't know. I just think he deserved something there, so I'm a little disappointed. And maybe they had him in a cut of the movie. I know I read somewhere that Muschietti had a 4-hour cut of this movie somewhere, so there's a lot of stuff they cut out. Maybe it was in there at some point and they just cut it. I don't know. Because I think a lot of the stuff that made it in there, really, the cameos we get either focus on stuff that was never going to be or stuff that is so far in the past it has no connection of stuff going forward. So it's like anything current or future character-wise, they didn't put in there
really
at all. Am I just
remembering it wrong, or didn't we see a reverse Flash in there at some point?
If we saw it, I missed it. I don't remember it. I honestly thought the villain of this movie was meant to be Reverse Flash. Like, I thought that was where they were going with this.
Yeah. That's where I thought they were going to go, too, but...
Well, I've seen, like, the action Flash figure in the store. Well, they're calling that version of Flash Dark Flash.
Yeah.
Is what the action figure was telling me when I saw it in Target. So okay. It's not Reverse Flash. So maybe they're trying to go a different direction.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be kind of one of the other villains from the show, like Scimitar or Zoom.
Yeah, that's like the way he looked... I thought it was one of those from the going again based off the Flash TV show. That's what I was pulling from.
Right.
And I think just the change in the color of the lightning, I was starting to lean towards Reverse Flash, and they never really refer to him that way. And he doesn't really go, I guess, full on villain. I guess we see a version of that, but I don't know. I'm a little disappointed it's not Reverse Flash, but.
But what was the other version of Flash? Not Reverse Flash, but like the. It's been so long since I actually read Flash comics, and I'm just blanking. The one that wore like the tin hat, or whatever you would want to call it,
that was like OG Flash, like Golden Age Flash.
Didn't that turn up?
Yes, we do see him in there. Yes.
Yeah, that one I know turned up for sure. I feel like Reverse Flash is in there somewhere, but I know for sure that one was there.
Didn't we get a Wonder Woman cameo too?
Yep.
Was there a version of one? No. Okay.
Not in the colliding worlds.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm just thinking about what I read. I think they wanted to include Linda Carter in there, and they didn't. I think she was one that got cut.
Yeah, that's a shame as well.
Well, we didn't even talk about the Ben Affleck and Gal Gadotness.
Oh yeah,
of it all as well.
Let's go there.
Movie.
Which again, I think that was some of the best Ben Affleck Batman shit that we get in any of the movies. Like,
I agree.
I thought his stuff was great.
Yeah, he was better as Bruce Wayne here than he ever was before.
Yes. Yeah.
I loved the bit after Diana, because admittedly, even after seeing Shazam, never thought in a million years that Gal Gadot was going to show up in here. I didn't think she had a reason to, and she really doesn't.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. There's no reason for her to be there, but I'm glad that she does. That 60-second bit that they did with Batman having the lasso on him tied to the villain and then Barry trying to help him and they're just spilling their guts.
The virgin thing from Barry was fucking hilarious.
That line specifically, this was a brilliantly written line. So simple. Thank you, Christina Hodson. He says, I know sex exists, but but I haven't experienced it yet. That phrase, I know sex exists. Like as a concept, as a general abstract, I'm aware of it.
Right. Yeah.
I love that. That's a great line. And Bruce's whole thing when he said, like, I'm far too proud to admit that I need help or that I'm grateful for help. And it's brilliant. It works. It's like the whole thing with when Aquaman is sitting, he doesn't know he's sitting on the lasso in Justice League. Right, and he just starts spilling. Yeah, it works really well.
Yeah. It's a good little comedic device, that lasso of truth.
Yeah. What did you guys think? I mean, we've kind of done like a Flash thing. We've gone back to front. What did you guys think of the opening sequence with the whole hospital collapse, the chase, the Batman does?
CGI I really liked problems.
It. I was kind of into it until the baby shower joke. Then I started to check out. I was like, okay, this is not at all trying to play serious with anything right now.
The baby shower? Yeah, that was...
Like, once the baby started falling out the hospital, I was like, oh, all right, what the fuck are they going to do?
He literally cooks a burrito in a microwave and then tosses the baby into the same microwave, and I'm like...
The microwave could like, not I understand... have been on.
Right.
The burrito was already in the microwave, so it's not like it was hot.
It's you don't put a baby in a microwave.
It's unplugged! It's falling from a building!
So why'd he put the burrito in it?
The burrito was already in there! The burrito came out like, of the hospital.
I like the section as a display of the Flash's. I like the section as a display of the Flash's ability and the way, you know, how quickly his mind works and what he needs to do to keep up his speed and the metabolism and eat and all that stuff. Like that establishes some rules for the character and what he's able to do, can't do, what the rule set is sort of for the powers. But just as a sequence, it just really felt too long to me, and then it just. I don't know if it set the tone, but it took a more comedic tone than I was expecting, given the way all of that started, I think.
And it just looked bad.
I suppose.
I'll stand by it just looked bad. Like it...
It wasn't my favorite in the movie, I'll put it that way. If you like it, Josh, I'm not trying to take away from it, but I think that was not my favorite part of the movie.
And I'll still stand by the whole idea of the Flash needing all the calories and everything. Protein bars exist. Why is he not just walking around with loads of protein bars for the most calorie pack a punch you can get? I don't understand that. It makes no sense.
I mean, if you could basically eat whatever you want and not get fat, like I would not be living off of protein bars.
Cholesterol but still exists, even if you're skinny. You can have horrible cholesterol. Like, I eat bacon all day, but I don't get fat. Well,
metabolism,
your veins are...
Mike.
does not burn cholesterol.
It's science.
Oh, science! Movie science. Is it away.
Movie science.
Yeah, that's fine.
Movie science.
But I agree.
You
need less.
Sorry.
Food. That was my only point about the protein bars. You need less of it, and you need to eat less often if you're eating something extremely nutrient and calorie rich. That's the whole point I was making. But go ahead. Sorry.
No, point taken. I really dug the Batman chase. The utilization of like the bat cycle and the shit it was spitting out,
yes.
Like the big like sphere that it drops and shoots and then it uncoils to the like the nail strip and whatnot. Like why did they wait? It's stuff like that. Like why did they have to wait till we're pretty much losing all of these actors in these roles and these version of the characters to do really cool shit?
Well, that's like, what I mean. That's why I feel like wing. Watching the movie, I feel like Muschietti had such a love for Batman that I feel like you feel it watching the movie. All the Batman shit is fucking cool.
The Batwing. We get the friggin' Batwing. Yes. And it is amazing. Yeah. That holy shit, that was, like, listen, they gave Christian Bale's Batman a realistic military-style thing that was the Batwing, and it was not half as cool as what this actual cartoon semi-accurate Batwing was. Like that Batwing, that made me feel like a child inside seeing Michael Keaton pilot that Batwing and watching the whole thing rotate around him and do all the things that it does. Oh man, that one of the
images
special.
That I will never forget now that it's ingrained in my head from this movie is when the Batwing is going up, he ejects out, it pauses in front of the moon for the symbol as he's just skydiving out of the screen on the right side of the frame. That is an image that I want as like a desktop background. It's the coolest fucking thing in the movie.
Yep. it just works.
Good.
It just works. Like a lot of what they did, like you said, with the Batman just works so damn well. And even like him showing his age in different moments where like he's groaning and like, oh, you know, like that hurt more than it used to. That whole, everything they did with Batman, I loved. I'm sorry.
I'm actually just thinking about it now. But one scene I think that I appreciate is them flashing back to Zod's attack on Metropolis and showing Barry having powers and trying to help for the first time.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool scene that they added. It builds out that world around Man of Steel and like, oh shit, like these are what other people were doing at that. Because we see it from Bruce's perspective for Batman v Superman. We see it from Flash's perspective in his movie. It's nice for the world building part of it, even though we're probably never going to see this world again, but it worked for me. And I liked that little tidbit.
Yeah. And on that note, like getting to see the younger version of Barry just be a fucking idiot with the powers was actually kind of funny. Just like, oh shit, I'm naked. What happened? Well, you didn't listen to me. Just that over and over and over again. Like, will you just stop and listen to me?
Yeah.
And just being unable to control patience. This idiot 18-year-old is like, man, I imagine that's what it's really like for a parent trying to control an 18-year-old.
And it's also the version of him that did not go through the tragedy of his childhood and had an otherwise normal life. So he's at that point just a normal shithead kid.
Yeah.
That doesn't have that baggage. So it's, he can't even, you know, the our Barry, I'll say, can't even use any other history, any other points to anchor him whatsoever because he has nothing to go by.
Right.
I have one semi-related question to The Flash, but it sort of leads into a Batman direction, so I'll save that as the last question. Anything else we want to wrap up with The Flash before we do that question and rating?
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is, obviously, they lean heavy into Back to the Future references at times in this. They also, like Endgame, they also literally have the conversation where they say, I think Michael Keaton says, you probably saw a movie that says if you change the past, you change the future. That is the literal same discussion that the Hulk and Don Cheadle and Paul Rudd have when they're getting ready to test the PIM particles, literally the same conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I do appreciate that they tried to find their own unique way to explain timelines and multiverse, because this was different than Back to the Future. This was different than even Avengers came up with.
The spaghetti bowl was awesome.
That was actually really creative.
This is what you do to time when you mess with time.
Yeah, and it's funny that when he takes the two strands, and he says, you may have seen a movie where it says this, and he bends the one strand. That's literally what Doc Brown does in Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
That is the literal explanation he provides in that same illustrative way. That's where it came from. But I think they had a challenge in trying not to sound repetitious, because they're the second time travel movie creating a multiverse that's being created. So, they had a challenge in front of them. There was some things they copied, basically took the same path, but they found a way to give their own presentation of time paradoxes, which I applaud them for.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
And I did like the jokes that they have in Barry's apartment where Eric Stoltz is the Back to the Future kid, and all those other people are in all those different movies now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mike, you got anything else to add for the movie?
Not off the top of my head at this point.
Okay. The only thing, last question I sort of wanted to spin to was, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, was just the news that director of The Flash, Andy Muschietti, was announced to be directing Brave and the Bold, which is going to be the Batman movie that exists in James Gunn's DC Universe. Just wanted to kind of pull your thoughts after seeing him direct this movie. What do you think that Batman Brave and the Bold movie could look like? Are you excited for that? And I know we kind of covered it, but basically, if he's out of the running and moving to a Batman movie, does that basically, again, seal the deal for a Flash sequel that we're not going to get one? Or if they move forward, do you think they would get another director?
That's hard to say. But as far as the question about the Batman movie, he can make Batman content. Like, the Batman content in this movie, as we've said, is fucking good. So, if he's gonna make a Batman movie, I'm gonna watch it and see what he does with it. So,
yeah,
I'm there for it.
Josh, what do you think?
Same. On the one hand, you wouldn't, I think the easy answer would be you don't need the same director just to have a Flash sequel. But we just started the episode with a litany of like 10 different people who they tried to get to make a Flash movie, and it took this long. So, counterpoint, I get it. I don't know. I think I'm not avoiding the question, but I think I just still stand by the fact that I think this is the end, so it's a moot point.
Okay. As far as Muschietti coming to Batman Brave and the Bold, are you excited for that prospect?
I think so. I don't. I'm not real thrilled with the idea of the Damian Wayne storylines.
Okay.
They just don't appeal to me that much. Maybe they can find a way. You know, if they tell a story that I've already seen pieces of from some of the books I've read or some of these other like animated movies, maybe, I don't know. It'd be a little lackluster for me. From a vision standpoint, though, I now have great confidence that he'll probably put forward something pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was excited for Batman Brave and the Bold just as a concept. Like, when it was announced in the slate, I was like, that sounds like a cool movie. Having Muschietti attached after watching The Flash, it's like, okay, yes, that makes sense. I think he did very well with the Batman stuff. I think you can tell he has an affinity for that character and that, I don't know about style. I guess we don't really know what the style of the movie's going to look like. But yeah, the Batman stuff is, again, and I've said it a couple times, what I've come out of this movie really enjoying, which is weird. I'm going to see a Flash movie, but I'm talking more about Batman stuff. But if that's how I feel after this movie, I'm much more excited, I think, for what Muschietti can do for Brave and the Bold. As far as the sequel, I don't know. I think I've always just assumed that the easiest thing to do if you're making a sequel is to get the same director back. That's usually where they start. And if your director doesn't want to come back, it's much harder to move forward on a sequel if you want to get someone else behind the wheel. And this maybe comes back to sort of what we talked about, where they're judging by the box office and you know, behind the scenes stuff with The Flash and the direction of the DC universe going forward, it's hard to tell. And I'd almost put money on we're not going to get a sequel. I'd be much more surprised if they did move forward with a Flash 2, but we'll see. I'm sure that's something we'll talk about if it ends up on the slate and see what happens. I mean, James Gunn did announce in the slate that there were some movies that they're planning that they have not talked about. So this could be a very well-kept secret that they want to move forward on Flash 2, or he just meant we're going to keep this in the wings. We may move forward on this depending on the box office. And if it doesn't happen, then we'll just quietly shove it aside and you'll never know we were even trying to work on this movie.
It's a smart choice to do rather than listing out 10 years of movies and not delivering.
Yeah, so I think we're still at the wait-and-see approach. So we'll wait and see over the next couple of years what happens. We'll wait and see what the fallout is for the box office for this movie and if it rebounds or just kind of tanks a little bit more. And you figure $300 million is a break-even point for the movie. If it hits $500 million, I think it's a safe bet that the studio probably feels that the movie did well enough to maybe move forward. If it ends up at $400 million, there's no way in hell I think we're getting a sequel to this movie. So we'll see where we go. All right, we'll finish up with ratings. Out of 10, Mike, where do you rate The Flash?
I'll give it an 8.
Okay. Elaborate a little bit or just going with the number?
Pretty much what I said at the beginning. The story is really well written. It has a really good moral. It's really well told to get to that moral. There's just a lot of really poor CGI and bad closing decisions that kind of bring it down a lot for me. So it could have been better with more of a budget put to it. It could have been better in a few ways. But in general, the story holds up so well, I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
That's where I'm at.
Josh, where do you fall with it?
I'm going to go with an 8 as well. We also haven't really ever talked about the real, like, heartstrings of the movie. Not that we have to.
I was kind of going
to
bring that up when I got to my rating because I just realized we didn't do that either.
But I mean, the entirety of it that hinges on his desire to save his mother's life, to want to know a life that he spent with her, and that he can continue on, and you know, from his present point, that whole closing scene of him going back again to take the tomatoes out of the shopping cart that he already in the past went back to try to correct, that you just see there's one or two moments, like especially as he walks away and he takes them out, you just see, and I'll give Ezra Miller props as an actor in this regard. There's a moment or two where you see he's just breaking every cell of himself in this decision, and he sells all of it so well.
Yeah.
I do like, I forgot actually until I see Ron Livingston on camera, I forgot that Billy Crudup wasn't coming back for this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That after
yeah.
Justice League, for whatever reason, he just decided, I'll do this little bit, but I just don't want to do anything else. I think Ron Livingston was a great choice. He doesn't have much screen time, but he's always a solid actor. I like him a lot. I think he's very underrated. Mm-hmm. And everything that they go through, I enjoyed. So it's a good 8 for me, but I'm also much, I think, a harsher judge sometimes. I have a hard time judging things in a vacuum. I'm constantly putting things against other things.
Yeah.
So for everything that I just bolstered, and for them to say it's only an 8 in my mind, it's hard to get an 8 from me. So
yeah,
that's where I am.
Well, it's funny because I think we're all going to end up with the same score because I'm leaning towards 8 as well for this, which I think might be the first time we all actually agreed on a podcast for a score. I was leaning towards 7 or 7.5 for this movie, honestly. And the more I thought about it, is the reason I got an 8 was the same reason that Josh just mentioned. That emotional hit at the end of the movie in the grocery store when Barry finally gets the hug from his mother, knowing that he's going to lose her right after that, hit so hard and unexpectedly that that was enough to give this movie another half point to a full point, because it builds to that moment, and when it hits, it's going to make or break the movie. I think it made it for me, so I'm sticking with an 8. All right, I think that's it for this one. I'll wind it down. If you've enjoyed the show, please support us. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Be sure to give us a share on social media. You can follow or subscribe to keep up with the show. We are on Spotify, iTunes, Google, Anchor, Stitcher, Amazon, hopefully anywhere you're finding podcasts, you can find us. As always, check us out on Facebook, search Bry Guy and Super Friends, or go to facebook.com/BryGuySuperFriends. You can send us questions, comments, topic suggestions, any of that stuff there. Try to email me, BryGuySuperFriends@gmail.com. It's probably been over a year since I checked it, so good luck. Hit us up on Twitter @BGSuperFriends that I can see and respond to. As I mentioned at the top of the show, if you want to follow me on Twitch, it's Jedi Bry Guy, Jedi with an I, Bry with a Y. If we ever do another live recording of a show, we will do it there. If we do that, I'll keep you posted. I know we're getting close to 300. I don't know if we're going to do a live recording there or not, but we'll try to figure something out. It might just be a come and gone 300 episode. It might just be run of the mill. Hey, regular episode. We just happen to be 300. I don't know if we're going to do anything special. We'll see what happens. But that's it for us. On behalf of Josh, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.